Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I'm Josh Giddey, and I'm down to dunk.
Hey, this is Kenny Hustle, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Darius Baisley, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Mike Muscala, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Poku, and I'm down to dunk.
I love cereal. Captain Crunch. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Cracklin' Oat Bran.
Oh, I can have these? I'm gonna share with my team, but I'm a hog most of it.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me, not as always, never really, on Sundays, is Michele Barra. Michele, what's up?
All good here. I mean, we used to record on Sunday from time to time in the past.
That's true.
But never live.
It's been a while. Yeah, never live. That's true. We used to record and then drop it later, but... You know, we got to do it live. It's just so much better live. You guys can join us and throw in some comments. Let us know about the dumb things that we're saying as we're saying them. So it's great. And it's a good reminder for those that are just listening to the podcast to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com, search Down to Dunk, hit subscribe. You can hit the little bell. It'll let you guys know when we go live. And then you can join us. We can have a good time. So be sure to do that. Michele, last night... The Thunder played another really great tank game, man. I'll tell you.
Awesome.
I was riding high after that one. Joe Masato was actually giggling at me a little bit afterwards about how happy I was. but it was great.
You were very serious, though, during the telecast. They showed you like a couple of times you were very composed. So.
Is that right? Oh, no.
Yes.
Yeah, I've had to... there were probably points. The mask helps a lot. It makes me look probably more serious than I am at times. Really fun game. I mean, honestly, the Thunder played some really good basketball at points and put some really bad basketball at points. And that Cavs team is just really fun to watch. They're so wacky. It's such a weird team to watch. And so it was just a fun night of basketball, man.
Yeah, it was. And the first two quarters were like very good in terms of shot quality for OKC. They were super sharp in executing, finding the corners, beat the zone and stuff like that. And they took advantage of every mistake that Cleveland was having out there. And then the second half, well, Cleveland show why they are so good at defense, why Mobley can be... such an important piece of a very good defense, and OKC stopped executing at a very high level, and that helped the tanking quite a bit. But you know, there are games like this, you learn a lot on your team. Like, you learn that when they'll have shooting around, everything will be easier, but they still have they still need to execute at a very high level. And if they execute very, very well, then they may be dangerous already on any given night.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. I felt a little bit like some of the stuff they were doing in the first half was a little unsustainable as far as like the scoring stuff goes. So I was, when they were up by like 12 to 15, I was like, there's nothing about it that really felt real to me. So I was curious to see how Cleveland would respond, because Cleveland's been good all year, and it's been like they do things that are sustainably good. Is that they just have a bigger, longer team than anybody else. Like that's honestly what's so different about them, and the fact that Jared Allen and Evan Mobley can move their feet really well it just makes all the difference. Like it makes,
yes.
Like that's how you do it. Most teams can't do this. Like the Thunder can't do this. One, they don't really have any 7-footers. Two, teams just don't do this because guys can't move their feet. And even Markkanen's not great. Like Dort really had what he, when, if Dort just continued to drive on Markkanen, he was going to get what he wanted. But they have put him in, like JB Bickerstaff, like give him credit because he's found places to kind of hide him on yeah. the defensive end to where he's not like a huge liability. Cause, and that's one thing that I'll be watching for come playoff time is how do the Eastern Conference, whoever their Eastern Conference matchup is, how do they find Markkanen, you know, on that end? Because that's the switch, right? That's how you, that's yes. how you're going to get points is through him. But Mobley can stay with guys. Jared Allen is decent at staying with guys on the perimeter. Baisley blew by him last night on, you know, more than one occasion and yeah. got to the rim. He had that ferocious dunk, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool dunk.
Yeah, it was a really nice play. Baisley had a fun game last night. He played really well for the most part. He, however, he was a part. I think sometimes when Baisley gets it going, his confidence level, I don't know. It's as if like doing the right things takes his confidence level to on to the next level where it's like, okay, now that I've done those things, let me bring out this new checklist, right?
Yeah.
Like I feel like he does like the checklist of like dunk, corner three, easy shots, rebound, defense, great. I've checked all those boxes. Now it's time to go get mine. And then he goes and he does his thing. And it's like, no. Yeah. Like stay over here. Stay on this checklist because this checklist is very good for you. Like this is your payday. Like this is how you make it and get paid in the NBA. Obviously that other checklist is how you get max money and like superstars, right? But he's not that. Stay over here. You're going to get a nice payday if you stay over here. And that's the whole thing with Baisley right now is can he just harness it himself? Because like during the Cavs big run, Baisley had this like horrific airball three that was just like, why are you yeah. shooting this like above the brick three right now? Like that's not your shot. You should have moved the ball. And
yeah.
Mark talked about it after the game that like the blender basically just shut off in the third quarter and that like nothing was getting done as far as the offense going. And
yeah, they really stopped executing.
Yeah, they really did.
And Cleveland put up a better effort, to be sure. I mean, that was also part of why
sure.
the execution was a bit tougher. And for example, and I discussed this a little bit with John on Thunder After Dark, but I think that Giddy had his had a night where, I mean, he really struggled with length. I mean, yeah. the usual getting down there, back to the basket, and someone will cut and I will find him really didn't work because Cleveland has all the length of the board and like finding windows, passing windows through all those arms, like extremely long arms is very difficult. And so I think that was also a factor. But the way in which OKC decided, well, now we just hunt mismatches and one-on-one. That doesn't work. I mean, it can work from time to time. You surely need to do it when you can take the defense when it's not set. For example, Shea anticipated the defense a couple of times and just had a clear way to the basket. That is good. But when the defense is set and is waiting for you, you really need to do something else.
Yeah.
And that something else is the thing that is missing. You said, I mean, the beginning of the game was not sustainable, true in terms of percentage, but I also did not see that the same shot quality for the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. And I kind of bet that had they stick with that a little bit longer, I mean, this could have been a win for OKC.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, Kenrich is somebody that kind of keeps them in the blender to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like not having him. Last night, like the value, like you saw it, that the value wasn't there, and Kendrick uh-huh. provides a ton of that value. So there's some of that. What did you think of Josh's corner three? Did you watch that intently? It was in the first half.
Yeah, I did. I did. I just think that that is an easier shot, and it's not that he takes like better, like it's not that he's better at it. It's just that probably it's a little bit of an easier shot, and it's. I think that in basketball, the corner and the three from like the top of the key are the easier shots. The above the break, it's the one where you really need to be great to take those.
Yeah.
And so I think the difference is just that. But I want him to take those. I mean, those are there if he wants to take them. And so same for Dort. I mean, he can hit above the break threes, but why not the corners?
Yeah.
And there was a time, I vividly remember, when Baisley was misplaced in the corner. And like, it was a time where Cleveland was like getting closer. And there were two, three possessions where there was miscommunications in offense, and like Giddy wanted to be in the corner, but that was Baisley. So there was a little bit of miscommunication there. And in games like this, it's all that matter. I mean, it's basically one possession, one and a half possessions. So it's, but it's normal for a team like this, not be able to execute at the very high level in clutch time.
Well, I mean, this is why young teams don't win. Like, this is, mm-hmm. it's just as simple as that. I don't know. I thought that just that three specifically, I went back and watched all his possessions this morning. And Josh, I mean, what did he have? 8 shots last night? It's not like there were a lot, but that corner three, his release is already quite a bit faster than it was last year at the NBL, is mm-hmm. why I brought it up. Just because it looked good, it looked natural. There was like zero hesitation. There was zero thought into it. Like, he was just in the game. And the game mm-hmm. came right to his fingertips, and he just let it fly. And I thought that was really important. It's just really important for me, like, to see that there's no hesitation. There's no like catching jab step, because like Markkanen, like, he could have caught it and just flown by Markkanen and probably gotten to the rim, you know? But mm-hmm. The fact that he's willing to take that corner three without hesitation, I think that's a really good thing. I was just excited to see that. Uh-oh, I think Mikkeli's frozen. The rest of the game, I thought, was pretty brutal for the Thunder. Ultimately, it's the best thing for them. It's the best thing for this team to lose a game like that to Cleveland. I didn't realize that like this was like the last game of a 6-game road trip for the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
Which, like, man, it made it even more impressive watching them, because they were giving it their all night.
Yes.
And to do that second night of a back-to-back, last game of a 6-game road trip, that's a schedule loss. I don't care who you're playing, especially if you're playing the try-hard Oklahoma City Thunder, it's a schedule loss.
And it looked like that for, again, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. I mean,
and the thing that makes the performance of Cleveland even more impressive is that for the first 4 or 5 minutes of the third quarter, like, OKC was improving the margin. Like, they were getting better. They went to plus 18, I think.
Yeah, they did.
And there was the moment where Muscala was hitting, everyone was hitting threes, and they stuck with it. And said, okay, like, do your thing. And then then Garland took control of the game. It was so quite a performance for Garland. He played a lot. And Bickerstaff made another very good move. He decided to start the fourth quarter with him on the court.
Yeah.
Like, that was a move to say, okay, he really wants it. And it worked. I mean, he was out there. No one could guard him. And in those moments, I think that the game was won.
Yeah, it was that. And then they stopped playing Lamar Stevens and Isaac Okoro and let Dylan Windler play. And that helped them a lot, too, because it opened up space for them. And with their big lineup, I know Markkanen can shoot it. That's great. But they needed another shooter out there. And, you know, Stevens is a nice try-hard wing. But Shea was kind of having his way with him all night.
Yeah.
And from the first possession, Stevens was so frustrated that Shea got him in the air and got that foul. He was running across the court, just like dropping F-bombs like crazy. He was so mad that he got that call was on him. It was funny. And then another one happened later in the game where Shea got the three free throws. And Bickerstaff was so mad because, and Bickerstaff was right, because the motion, Shea got him in the air and then Shea kind of got around him and did that weird shooting motion to get the foul. Well, that's supposed to be taken out of the game. Like, that's not supposed to be a part of this game anymore. And he was so funny, just arguing with the officials. He's one of the more animated coaches out there. He and Mark actually like put on a show out there with the way they talk to officials. It's actually pretty funny.
Yeah, it was also very weird, the officiating. I mean, for the first two quarters, they were allowing any contact, like just everything. You could almost murder a guy and that would have been fine. And then they changed. It was like quite evident to me that they corrected a bit, and players took, I think, 5 to 6 minutes to adjust, and then it was fine anyway. It was not like from either side. It was just contact everywhere, but on both sides, and then they tighten up a little bit.
Yeah. It was, and there was a lot of arguing with the officials as everything kind of played out. Shea's passing last night during really the first half was like really on point too.
Yes.
I was quite impressed with the playmaking side from Shea. He was finding the corners. He was finding the roller. And again, this is not the finished product team. And if you add like a legit threat, either as a roller or as a shooter, the fact that you have Giddy and Shea, they are both going to be able to find those guys, is such a big deal. And the fact that, and kind of why I pointed out Giddy taking that corner three, like it's important because that's going to be the corner that's open whenever they eventually get somebody else that can shoot it. And if Giddy can hit that shot, he's shooting 39% from the corners this year. If that can be a number that holds like that, and like the corner, you shouldn't judge it the same way that you judge an entire 3-point shot. Like the corner should be 39-40%. Your 3-point shot overall could be 36 or 37, but the corners should always be better. They should always be higher than what you think of a traditional shooter. So if he can be a 37 to 42% 3-point shooter from the corners, then suddenly having that guy in the other corner that can really shoot it, or above the break that can really shoot it, like that's going to matter so much more. So just the fact that he's just willing to let it fly, you know, is really good. And I'm trying to view this team as like this incomplete product that is, or like an, like it's almost like a car that's like missing like tons of parts, you know, like, okay, like it's looking good here, it's looking good there, but we need to add this or we need to add that. And you can see just the giant holes that are in this roster. And if you watch any of these guys in the NCAA right now, you're like, oh, like guys 1 through 5 could really fill some of these holes, you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of, some of the good news within some of the draft stuff recently is that there are a lot of guys showing out. There's a lot of guys that look really good. It's not just three. I think that there's going to be more than three guys. Obviously, it'll be similar to what this last draft was, where like Cade Cunningham looks really good and Evan Mobley looks really good and Scottie Barnes looks really good. Those top guys are always going to look better. But the fact that maybe you have like less question marks as you get to 4, 5, 6, I think is quite important just because you don't know what kind of luck you're going to have. I mean,
yeah, granted. I mean, last year was a 5 to 6 players draft.
Yeah.
And we got the 6th pick. Mm-hmm. It would be nice to have again a 6 players draft, maybe getting a little bit better.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, even if it's a 6 player draft, you don't necessarily want to be the one who picks last. Mm-hmm. Even if, again, I think they found a great player in Giddy.
Yeah,
on the corner trees, the issue with that and with the idea of basketball that at least I have in mind is that if you play like Houston did with Harden, it's completely fine to have a 40% 3-point shooter from the corners only. Like you place him there, Harden does his thing. Maybe someone like takes a screen and that's it. like no one has to move, no one has to do sophisticated things.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is the offense that suits Giddy the best. Maybe it suits Shai, because he can play that kind of basketball, and he did for the majority of the first half, like attacking, finding corners, finding cutters. Mm-hmm. That can be a way to play basketball. I wonder if Shai and Giddy, if they want to play together, they need to be more involved. It needs to be movement all around. Yeah. And then it makes it a little bit harder to say, hey, you are just a corner three shooter. Like, mm-hmm. it's harder because you may not be in the corner for like a lot of seconds, and you may get the ball in other part of the court, and you have to be effective. So it's also about, like, if you look Golden State, they have a lot of versatile shooter. That is what you really need. I mean, Poole can hit from anywhere. Thompson can hit from anywhere. Curry can. Dre is limited, but he's in a specific part of the court. Like, he operates at the top of the key. Mm-hmm. And that was still the biggest weakness of Golden State's that lineup. So sure. I'm fine with Giddy being a corner three-point shooter now. And I'm probably fine also in the future, because I want him to be the lead ball handler. And then maybe when he relocates, he can relocate to the corner, mm-hmm. After a few motion. But then the question is, what can Shai do in that setting? Like, yeah. And that is still to be decided. I know that he can do a lot of stuff. He's a better shooter than probably anyone else with the feet set, maybe with the exception of Muscala and Ty Jerome. You just have to create opportunities. And that, I think, it's could be the focal point of this summer. Like, just find a way to have Giddy and Shai orchestrating an offense together, and not, hey, when Shai is on the ball, we do pick and roll. Then he tries to get to the basket, if not, corner.
Yeah, there's just so many paths they can take. And watching Cleveland last night kind of shows you that. I don't think Cleveland set out trying to build this team. Like, they weren't like, hey, we're going to build this giant team and, you know, have this kind of small point guard to kind of lead everything, but everybody else is going to be giant. Like, no, like, they were opportunistic with trades. They were opportunistic with the signing of Markkanen, and then they just drafted two guys in the top five. And they drafted Garland at five. They drafted Mobley at three. And suddenly they're a team that looks pretty good. I mean, even after last year, you have Sexton and Garland, and you still win 20 games or whatever they won. And it's like, oh boy, like, they're so far away. Well, turns out just adding Evan Mobley and, shifting a couple of things around changed everything. And the same could be said for the Thunder. And the Thunder already have more pieces than Cleveland did. And, you know, more pieces that I would feel confident in with Shai and with Giddy. And, you know, they have to figure out what they're going to do with Sexton, and does he fit, and do they re-sign him? Do they sign and trade him? Like, whatever. Like, that's another just asset that they have, which is nice to have for them. But the Thunder are on a similar schedule, but you have to remember where they're at. Like, they're in the middle of year two. You know, in the middle of year two, for them, they were just on the verge of selecting Isaac Okoro, you know, in the draft, which is a guy that I really liked in the draft. I still believe in him to an extent. He did not play well against Oklahoma City last night, and had actually some moments that I was, like, pretty concerned about, like, decision-making and stuff like that with him. He just wasn't very good. But you might miss. Like, they missed. Like,
yeah,
they,
but even
they missed, and that, like, they've missed, and they still are making it work. You know, they still made it work. You hit two out of 3 years, and you're still okay.
But would you, like, I was looking right now at the 2020 draft. Like, it's not that they screw up. Sure. It's that after him, there was nobody.
That was a bad draft.
like, can I read it? Like, I'll read the names after him. Yeah. Number 7, Killian Hayes. Number 6, Okongwu.
Okongwu.
Okay, but I get why they don't.
But the fit's not there. Yeah.
Yeah. Killian Hayes, no. Obi Toppin, no. Danny Avdija, no. Jalen Smith.
I kind of like Danny.
No. Yeah, it doesn't make a difference to me. Okay, I never liked the guy. I don't know. It's
Halliburton is the one.
Yeah, but come on, they would never draft him. with the guys that they have, which is probably wrong because you can't
move. It shows why it's like this full picture, because that's the thing is like we're so sometimes we are so zoomed in on what the team has now that we're unwilling to part with pieces that later may not look like they fit.
Sure. Let's say Halliburton. Yes, it's one. Then Keir Lewis Jr. No. Aaron Naismith. No. Cole Anthony. No. Yes. But come on. Let's say two. Isaiah Stewart. Pokuševski. No. Josh Green. No. Sadiq Bey. Yes. We are at 19.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are maybe four or five guys in the draft. There is Maxi and blah, blah. Let's say even six or seven guys. Like nobody in five spots after him was like there to be taken. Like Pat Williams, sure, but it was earlier. Mm-hmm. So it's not that they dramatically screw up with the core. It's to be honest with you, everyone at that spot would have taken him, maybe Killian Hayes, someone Okongwu.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. That's totally true. I'd also say this for like Jaden Ivey doesn't look like a fit for Oklahoma City. Like I'll say that. However, I still think you take best talent available, you know, and you just see how it works. Like if you're four and Jabari, Chet, Paolo are gone, like at this point, I still think that you take a swing at Jaden Ivey. I still think that you do it. Or, I mean, a lot of people are liking what Johnny Davis is doing right now. Like maybe that's a guy that would fit better just because of the shooting.
But Jaden Ivey is shooting good, right?
People are still just don't trust it. They're not ready to trust the shooting yet.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
Sam does. So I do.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's worth repeating the story that makes me believe in Sam's ability to detect if a shot will pan out or not. Maybe we have some young listener in terms of how many years that they are listening to the pod. I remember one pod that Andrew did with Sam, and I remember because I was in the US, I'm sure, and I remember vividly where I was, and Sam said something like, who was the player? Anderson? Justin Anderson? Was that the guy?
Yes, Justin Anderson. Yep.
And he told Andrew, Justin Anderson shot is very close to Andre Robertson's.
Yeah, and I remember that. I was like, what are you talking about, man?
What are you saying? Are you crazy? Like Anderson was shooting 40%+ on a quite high volume.
Yeah.
And he never, never developed a shot in the NBA.
Nope.
And I mean, since then, I mean, hey, when Sam talks about the draft, but about shooting, especially, just trust him. He has an act for that. Mm-hmm. And so if he says that Ivy can develop a shot, I kind of trust him.
He also said he thought Giddy could too, by the way.
Like
he just thinks that Giddy will just do it. Which is encouraging. And also, like we've seen so far this season, that it's just falling. And he, you know, I asked him about it again last night, and he remains extremely confident in his shooting.
Yeah.
Regardless of if it goes in or not, he's just like, I'm just feel confident in it, which is great.
Yeah, and he's unfazed by anything that happens. So he can have like a high turnover game, and it's not that the next game he passes the ball less or lowers the difficulties of the passes. He's just, hey, yeah, they got me. Okay, I'll do better.
For a 19-year-old, mentally, he is extremely strong, which is like such a good sign, because sometimes guys don't come in and feel that way naturally, and it takes them some time. Like I'll say, I can't say that I know that Trey Mann isn't as strong as Josh is mentally. He just is different. Like he's built differently mentally than he is, and the Thunder having to build him up a little bit differently than they are Josh, because I feel like they can just let Josh go. And I feel like some of like the, like reel him in, put him back out there, reel him in, put him back out there with Trey, is some of it is a mental game as much as it is a basketball, like pure basketball. I feel like the same with Poku. I feel like the same stuff as with Poku, because Poku doesn't have that same mentality. Poku, you'll see Poku kind of pouting out there a little bit sometimes mm-hmm. when he's not playing well. And I feel like some of the benching and even sending him to the G League, like some of it is like psychological stuff. And yeah. Poku was with the team last night, but he was inactive. He wasn't dressed. And he is sent back to the G League today. That was a part of the plan. They just wanted him to kind of be with the team so that maybe he mm-hmm. felt a part. And then he's not. There's a 6-game road trip coming up that I would guess they're not going to recall any of these guys for. Teo, Poku, or Isaiah Roby won't be playing on the road trip. They did recall Vit Krejci today, in which the way it was described to me was that Vit is still rehabbing his ankle. He had that really bad ankle injury. He had to be carried off the court, actually. This happened on Christmas Eve. Mm-hmm. And he's still rehabbing. And this is somehow more of like a clerical type of thing for the Thunder than it is like a let's get ready for Vit to play with the team. So
bad.
Don't anticipate Vit playing with the Thunder on this road trip.
Back on the best player available kind of discussion, mm-hmm. I think that you have to build a team by picking best available talent, but you need to have talent to develop him.
Yeah.
But and so like taking another guard seems counterintuitive. Like, what are you doing? Like, he needs the ball in his hands. You have already way too many players that do that. True. But it's not that Dort's spot in the starting unit is something that you necessarily have to take for granted. Like, mm-hmm. He can be a factor of the bench. I mean, a rotation with five guards, especially if one can guard threes and fours in Giddy, it's completely yeah. fine. Mm-hmm. Like, and you can develop all of them. Granted, probably you have to shed the minutes of a guy like Ty Jerome. You probably have to be more judicious on the minutes that you give to a guy like Kenrich Williams and or Aaron Wiggins, because mm-hmm. I mean, you can't play nine guards. / wings. And
I mean, maybe
but I agree with you. Yeah, you can, but then you really question the time. Sometimes yeah. I like in game the only bad news for me on the bad thing in the Cleveland the game against Cleveland was, hey, why is Ty Jerome leading the team? Being the lead ball handler. Just give the ball to Trey. Like, why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. I know that Ty is playing well, and that probably Ty is and will be kind of an asset at the deadline. I think that he could be easily moved for a second rounder.
Yeah.
I think there are teams that are in need, and that is maybe why, like, say, showcasing him for a couple of weeks and then trade him and get something. I get that. But at a certain point, you need to develop them. And so you have to be judicious. Yes, you can always take best available talent, but you need to be mindful about the time that you have to develop those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, Ty was hitting some deep threes last night.
Yeah.
He got a big old haircut and got some big old deep threes last night. That was really fun. I think his plus minus is one of the top ones as well. And who could have thunk that just some shooters help you out whenever they're on the court?
Yeah, and this is why, like, anything you do in the draft, you should have at least in the back of your mind, is he like a great shooter? We don't need like a good enough shooter like yeah. Shea. We need great shooters, like guys that are like amazing at that.
Yeah.
And I think that this can be a focus. I mean, everyone knows that in OKC. I mean, just mm-hmm. look how Muscala is impacting the game. And imagine if you have a guy that you can give him 35 minutes and he's as effective.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
That is the key.
Great shooting will unlock Giddy and Shea. Like, even yes. one great shooter will unlock it for them. And if they're a movement shooter, even better. Like, that's honestly kind of what they need, is a, like, not just a standstill shooter. They need a movement shooter.
No. Let's be greedy, though. Take one big man that can really shoot it and one guard that can move around like crazy. Because this is, I how I envisioned the team, like having Giddy and Shea, like a Duncan Robinson type of guard that can move around constantly, like Kyle Korver, and then a wing that can, a center that doesn't have to be that tall, but that can hit threes at a very high rate. And that is a team that I think can be extremely successful.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's why Jabari Smith is so intriguing. It's because he can just really knock down shots. And Banchero, to a degree, is like really intriguing too. Just his ability to score, his ability to grab and go. Yeah, there's some guys in this draft that I think are really interesting. Even down to like 8. Like, I feel like there's just some guys that can really play, which is exciting.
Sam was really questioning Banchero's shot.
Yeah.
That made me wonder. Like, I need to, again, as per every year, I don't start until the season is over because I want to focus on the NBA and I don't have time. But this is something where I will really dig into and try to maybe even watch some free throws and stuff like that, because it's when I saw the game against Gonzaga, it seemed to me that he was like getting there in terms of shooting, and that is a 32% 3-point shooter, which is not okay. I mean, of course, he can do other stuff, but
he can do a lot of other stuff, which will attract attention, which will bring help in a different way than like a pure shooter does, because he will attract the attention of the defense. There's no doubt about that.
Sure.
All right, let's take a break. Come back. We'll talk more about this Thunder team. And we're back from that quick break. I thought it'd be a good time to take a look at the Tankathon standings, see where the Thunder are at after losing this game last night. I'll even bring it up here on the stream, another benefit of subscribing to our YouTube channel. So the Thunder currently sit at 4. This is kind of where I have been saying for a while now, I think the Thunder will end up, is at this 4th spot. Indiana, however, super duper sucks. They've won one game in their last 10 games, which is really bad.
Can you make a brief comment on this? Like, how many guys, like smart NBA people, if you let them pick between Billy Donovan and Carlisle, how many picks Billy?
Not very many.
I mean, not many. And I was going back the other day in my mind saying, hey, Dennis Schroeder's like incredible season was under Billy Donovan.
Yep.
Billy Donovan somehow got Chris Paul to buy in, and with some like mistake during the playoffs, he kind of coached a great regular season with that team. He had just to he was the last coach, probably not the last one, because in Houston Westbrook was good, but he was good, a good coach for us. He coached that great OKC team and lost to Golden State just because Klay Thompson went nuts. Nuts in the most nuts way that you can think of. So is Billy Donovan an underrated coach? I kind of think so. Like
100%.
Like Chicago is good at defense. That is incredible.
And they have been good at defense since he's been there.
Exactly.
And like, it's not a coincidence. Yeah, with Vooch. Like, it is not a coincidence that they have been a top 10-ish defense since he's been there.
Every year.
And
but every team that he's coached is top 12 or more, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I mean, I think a lot of like the nitpicking that we had with Billy in hindsight, like, could have been directed toward a certain point guard or a certain team construction. Because Billy even took those, like, did some good stuff with those teams, and ultimately they were just very flawed in the end and couldn't get the job done. But it kind of
Ferguson is out of the league. Like, and he played okay. Like, Houston's out of the league.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, and you just, in hindsight's 2020, but you just wonder, what if they would have brought Billy in a year or two earlier than they did, you know, and would have let Scotty go and given Billy some more time with those guys. I think it would have been a really good thing. I think that maybe the history of the Thunder is a little bit different, but I don't want to talk about that now. Let's talk about Tankathon.
Sorry.
That's okay. No, Billy deserves a lot of credit. And even Sam Presti deserves a lot of credit for bringing Billy to the NBA.
Yes.
You know, although like the Magic tried to, and then like he had to go, and then he went back, and then, you know, Sam gets credit for, you know, round two for bringing him
over. He was successful. The other just tried.
True. So the Thunder sit at fourth. Indy is scary to me because they've been so bad. They got their guards back now. Maybe they can get things going, although Miles Turner has some sort of foot injury. You know, I don't know if that's a trade me foot injury or if that's just a real foot injury.
Yeah.
But however, he won't be playing in tomorrow's game for Indy, which is a little scary. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with them. I still hold firm to the thought that the Thunder do not want to fall below this spot in the reverse standings. That it will be. I mean, Orlando is just straight up bad. Detroit's won half their games recently and continues to win games. So,
but they will trade Grant and they will.
But Grant's not playing. Back.
I know, but this is situational.
They're getting Kelly Olynyk back.
Yeah, well, that may help.
I'm just saying, like, they're going to be feisty like OKC. They're not good. They're not going to be
frisky. Bad. Frisky, like Lowe said.
Yeah, they're frisky. Yeah, they're that. Houston's not good. Houston super sucks, especially since they got their young guys back. If they were able to keep all their young guys at bay and play all their vets on their team, they would surpass OKC pretty quickly, I think. But you put Şengün and Green and those guys out there, you're going to lose games. Just like with the Thunder. Like, this isn't a shot at... That's not a shot at them. Like, don't take it as that.
No.
Like, if the Thunder played just their young guys only, they would lose all the games. So don't take that as, like, me taking a shot at those guys. It's just... That's the way that the league works. I mean, look at Orlando, Detroit, Houston, OKC. Why are they at the bottom? Why are those the bottom four teams? They're all young, all of them. You know, why is Sacramento staying around eight? Like, why have they been around eight for the last, you know, 16 years? Well, it's because they're not quite young enough. You know, San Antonio, they're probably not quite young enough. Minnesota is not young enough anymore. Like, this is almost like an indicator of age more than it is anything else. You know, the 6 to 11 teams, you know, it's just, that's the way that it happens. Once your team starts, the core of your team starts to get older, you get pulled to the middle. That's what happens. And so, you know, the Thunder, the odds still aren't wonderful there, but you know, you give yourself a chance. You know, you take a little spin here and they fall to 7. This happens to me every time that I take a little spin.
Great. That is awesome, Andrew. Question for you. If you're Houston, are you interested in trading for Ben Simmons at all?
Well, the problem is, like, what does Philly want that Houston has?
Don't bother. I mean, you can put in another team that gives better things to.
Yeah. I would say no. Like, they had a chance before.
Yeah, but it was not. It was for Harden. That is different.
Yeah,
I don't think that the price could be lower. And the price, like, what they got, is what you should get for Harden.
Yeah,
but now it's not for Harden. Would you like? I think that a player like that in Houston. Houston is a big city.
Yeah.
So maybe he's amenable to play there.
Maybe
you have already a center that can shoot the basketball in Şengün. He doesn't play good defense right now, but I wonder, like, you have a gunner as a lead guard. It's not that if you trade for him you dramatically improve, especially if you give away Woods and Gordon and guys like that. I don't think it's bad.
I would rather just try in the draft the next 2 years.
But you trade the next one. Like, it's not that Simmons changes anything.
Yeah.
You may win like 2-3 games more. So what?
Yeah. Ugh. I don't know. I wouldn't do it. That's not the kind of team. I would rather a team like Minnesota trade for him, where he gets there and he's not like so much the man. Like, you trade him to Houston now, it's like, all right, guys, move aside. This is my team. You know?
Really? You think that he would do that?
Ben Simmons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would. I picture him as a, yeah, I mean, this is not the way I like to play, but it's not the guy that will say, hey, this is my team.
The dude is saying, I'm not even going to play for you. I'm not even going to play. He wanted,
yeah, but this
he
is wanted a Jimmy Butler.
He wanted Jimmy out of there. Yeah, exactly. It's even worse.
Yeah, possibly, but it's not like I'm the boss here. It's more.
You think that he's going to get there and watch Jalen Green dribble between his legs 50 times before he takes a shot and be excited? Like,
hey, what's the other option?
I think there's lots of other options for him eventually.
Good ones?
I don't know if they're good ones or not. I don't know. Houston has been a train wreck of a team this year with regards to like chemistry, and like the coaching staff looks miserable. There's a lot of players that are miserable. I mean, that's Ben Simmons isn't exactly the kind of guy I'd like to add to that mix if I were Houston.
Hmm.
You know,
yeah, it's tricky, but what is the team that can benefit from having him? Like, where in which kind of structure are you putting him? Like, I don't know, maybe like you need a strong organization. And yeah, of course, you can say the Golden State Warriors, as always. You can always say the Warriors or anything, but I'm like, okay, let's take away. OKC, you don't want him. That is clear.
No way.
He told me as much 6 days ago, so I will not push that any longer. Wow. I think I don't want it as well, but I kind of think that he is dramatically undervalued right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's why if I'm Minnesota or even the Kings, who, like, the Kings aren't playing for anything. Like just
yeah,
do
no,
it.
That, yeah.
Like those,
I think that
those situations are fine. Like do that. Like, you've already got some pieces that he could possibly unlock and kind of help out. Like, Houston doesn't have that yet. Houston is like this mostly blank canvas that has like some vague droppings of paint on them. You know, like I don't want that. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Sacramento is much better. You're right. They are not a crazy.
They've got older guys on the team already, and they've got some guys that you could trade over that would make the Sixers better. Like, if you did like Halliburton and Harrison Barnes.
No.
What do you mean no? What do you mean no?
No, I don't want to trade away Halliburton.
Well, I'm just saying, if you're going to get Philly to bite, that's probably got to be what it looks like.
And not Fox?
I don't know, man. Like, Fox, I don't love the Fox Embiid pairing. Fox also has these like giant braces on his ankles that are just like massively concerning to me.
That's why if you're Sacramento, that is the only thing that you do. And if you're Philly, you get him, and it's the best hope. And it's not that Philly has a problem with shooting.
Yeah.
Like, they can have four out. With Embiid shooting 39% from three, like,
yeah, I just don't like the maxi fit with Fox. Like, I like the maxi fit with Halliburton.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, that's where I would be. Like, I think adding, and maybe even it's Buddy instead of Barnes, and like you just add more shooting.
But nobody, you know, on the team wants to compete.
Buddy,
he's so bad.
He's really defense. He is.
He can't play in the playoffs. Like, just can't.
That's probably true. That is probably true. However, I'd like to see him in a situation that matters. Like, he hasn't played in a situation that matters yet at all.
Yeah. put Simmons alongside him, and then maybe he can play in the playoffs.
What about put him alongside Embiid?
Even Embiid needs point of attack defense. It's the most important thing.
They're not asking him to be the point of attack defender, though.
But the other team will do that. Will absolutely make him do that.
That's so true. I know.
No, you need to have a switchy defense if you want to have him. And like a 1-5 switching, and I don't know. I have no idea. I wouldn't sniff like a trade like that. But anyway.
I don't know. I mean, JJ Redick figured out a way.
And way earlier.
I know, but like, he didn't play for Sacramento.
Who cares? He's 30.
I still want to see him in a better situation.
Okay.
I think situation matters a lot. And maybe sure. Sacramento has ruined him. Like, that's certainly possible.
But it's Redick had Stan Van as a coach.
He did.
Early on in his career.
I know. And Buddy has had 75 coaches since he's been in the league.
And 78 interim coaches.
Yeah, it's a bad situation. It's ugly. All right. So the Thunder play tomorrow night in Dallas. 7:30 tip, I believe. Should be a fun one. They're on a road trip. They're not coming back to Oklahoma City until next Monday, so they're gonna be on the road the rest of the week. So it should be quite interesting to see how this road trip goes for the Thunder. Still have a lot of games to lose. We're through half of the season. And, you know, still another half. I'm interested to see what happens the rest of the way. Mike Muscala still doesn't play a whole lot for this team. And I don't know how many people tuned into the post game last night where Mark Degnaut talked about how Mike is dealing with something with his ankle. Well, it turns out he's not really dealing with something with his ankle. It's just like normal NBA stuff, you know, with guys. Like, they're always dealing with some kind of like nagging this or that. And they're always going to, like, he had severe problems with his ankle at the end of last year that did keep him out. And it's going to be something he's going to have to kind of manage the rest of his career. Just like Westbrook has to manage his knee the rest of his career. Just like, you know, Kevin has to manage his foot the rest of his career and stuff like that. So that's kind of more or less what he's dealing with. But you just have to wonder, like, at what point do they shut guys down? You know, we're less than a month away from the trade deadline. Who gets traded, if anybody? You know, you have to believe that they're going to try to get to the salary floor. Are they going to do that via trade? I mean, you'd think that at least a chunk of that would be via trade. And then maybe some of that is through some kind of signing somewhere. So I think a lot of interesting things are to come in the next few weeks for the Thunder. So it should be fun. All right. Be sure to follow Michele on Twitter at Mikey Berra. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew K. Schlecht. Hey, leave us an Apple Podcast 5-star review if you can. If you like our show, if you listen to it often. We would appreciate that. We're going to start reading those on the show again. So if you leave us a 5-star review, it will be read on the pod and here on YouTube as well. So subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else. Also, if you're on Spotify on your phone, you can leave us a 5-star rating there as well. That would be extremely helpful if that's how you listen to the pod. It's great. Just leave us a little 5-star. I don't think you can leave a review. I think you can just leave the stars. So we'll take the stars. Leave us the stars. All right. Have a great, great week. And we'll talk to you guys again on Wednesday.